outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gen.
Well, did you make it back from the retreat okay, Kyle?
We did make it back okay. Had some very interesting dialogue on the way back with one of the retreat participants and dropped her off at the Colorado Springs Airport and then had a lovely, just decompressing drive home. It was quiet, no music, and I just had space to think for 3.5 solid hours. It was wonderful.
Well, my ride home was very different.
Do tell.
Well, the camp director wanted to drive me back to Colorado Springs to have the conversation. So we had a great conversation about the retreat and what they want to do with that facility and, you know, whether we would use it more. It's out in the middle of the woods, but I mean, it's really a long ways out to get there, but it worked, a great facility, and loved the whole kitchen dining conversation area. It was fabulous. He was interested, and he wrote me this week to say the guy, the majority owner of the retreat ground, is going to read So You Don't Want a Church Anymore after he was telling you about our retreat.
Really?
Yeah. So he said,
oh my gosh,
this guy wrote a book, and so they're going to take a look at it. And then he drove me to Colorado Springs. I met a couple for lunch that I'd met at a previous thing, and they wanted to get together with me. Some of the guy drove to the restaurant, picked me up from there, and we went on a 4-mile walk in a park to talk about some racial equity kinds of issues.
Okay.
Then he took me to a dinner with another guy I'd met a couple years ago who's in the wild at heart field of things and influence of things. And so I had a, you know, 2.5-hour chat there and then finally got to a hotel late that night, flew out the next morning. So mine was not quite so relaxed as yours.
But I didn't know you had a conversation with somebody from the wild at heart audience. What was that like?
Not audience. He's actually connected pretty deeply to the leadership structure. I'm not sure how. Yeah. So we were talking through just lots of stuff and hunger, and we didn't talk about Wild at Heart much, but
yeah,
it was interesting. So I had a full day of conversation, man. It never stopped from the moment I got up that morning and got in a car at 9:30 until I got the hotel 9:30 at night. Maybe I got it.
I love it. I don't know if I would have necessarily responded. I mean, I would have enjoyed that, but I loved my balance of having some downtime to decompress and some time in rich conversation, because Jessica and I talked for one of the retreat participants. We talked the entire like hour and 45 minutes. And it was this really interesting thing because I took a wrong turn. I was like, we were deep in conversation. And so I took a different route to get back to Colorado Springs. And she was cracking up. She was like, "You're so calm about this." And I was like, "Well, there's not a whole lot we can do. So we just got to keep on the road, and I'm enjoying the conversation, and we'll get you to the airport in time. I'm not worried about that."
Were you halfway to Pueblo or what?
I'm not sure how we got there. The way that we went back was we still landed in the exact same spot, but it was a much windier mountain pass that went through some really deep, rough canyons instead of the more kind of straight, smooth road that we had on the way out there.
But you don't know where you got off the beaten track, huh?
I don't know. I missed it somewhere in Westcliff.
That early on. Oh my gosh.
That early on.
I was 8 miles from the camp. You already lost.
I made it to Westcliff, but I didn't make it past that. So
have you heard of GPS or no?
Oh, I mean, yes, but we were also in a good conversation, and me being me thought, there weren't that many turns. I'm pretty good about navigating. I should be able to get us back in time.
So you didn't have the lady yelling at you in Australia?
I did not have any Australian female voice yelling at me via the GPS. So,
man, that's just something. That's one of those things that's on my little soapbox list of people that we're trying to have a conversation driving out to the airport, and this lady's yelling at you every few minutes to make a turn here. This turn's coming up. And I'm just like, it's on the screen. Just follow the map. Don't have this. I've never enjoyed GPSs yelling at me.
I know.
But then we found out some interesting things about you.
That's true.
You're like a woman telling you what to do.
That was the running joke that I
we kind of let you off when we got to the retreat, but it was the joke of the ride up there. You actually said it. So best thing you heard this week?
best thing I heard.
We haven't done this in a while. You got anything?
We haven't. We missed last episode. We had a lot of other things that were going on in our minds last episode.
We did.
One of the things that I heard, ooh, and this was really good. It's hard to get depressed until your dreams come true. That was from a quote from one of the people that was being interviewed on the Mars Hill podcast. And they were talking about how, and the quote again is, it's hard to get depressed until your dreams come true. And the context of that quote was their dreams were to, they had met their quote unquote world dreams. And they got to the end of that dream and realized that the life that they expected to find there wasn't there. And so they had aspired to be this thing, and they'd aspired to go there, and they reached it. They reached the pinnacle of it. They fulfilled it. And then they realized that the life that they were hoping they would find there wasn't to be found, and that it wasn't as fulfilling. It was a really interesting quote. I had to think about it.
I like it. Yeah, I'm thinking about it too, because it kind of doesn't give a lot of credence to people being depressed who never get to their dream.
Also true.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to be depressed until you get what? Then people are depressed because they can't get there. They can't find a way out of whatever trauma, whatever struggle that their life has held. And they've just, so I'm kind of thinking that from both sides. I think it's pretty easy to be depressed when you never get to the top of your little mountain.
That's very true. Isn't that kind of the double-edged sword where there's this like angst and this feeling of not being complete as you're pursuing this dream that you think is going to be life fulfilling? So you're not doing well there. Then you hit the pinnacle. For the small percentage of people who actually meet the pinnacle of their dreams, but because it's based in something that isn't life-giving, they get there and they realize, oh, this didn't hold the freedom and the life and the joy that I thought I was going to. I've reached it, but now what?
Yeah, especially with the whole angst of getting down that road and fighting off the depression you're facing trying to get there is, once I get there, this will be all better. And then
exactly
when it's not all better, I think it's easy to be depressed on both roads.
I would agree.
So you cannot really be depressed till you've reached your dream. Well, that kind of washed out a lot of people's experience who got depressed and never got there.
Very true.
Speaking of Mars Hill, glad that's over. Whew.
Yeah.
Man, that's like miring in a pig pen for a long, long time. I mean, particularly those 2.5 hour episodes that they kind of finished.
Oh my gosh. But the last two.
Yeah, I know it's well listened to, a lot of chatter around the Christian world, but when they started it, it wasn't just Mark Driscoll's a bad guy. It's something's wrong with us for wanting to follow these kind of people. And I'm not sure they ever addressed that very well.
They brought up the questions, but honestly, I would be intrigued to find out if they only brought up the questions but didn't really dive in because of who their target audience is. I don't know. Like, is that the listening base of Christianity today that all of a sudden would be getting triggered by some of the questions that are being answered? And I don't know. I have no idea.
Or asked. I just think it was easier to focus all on this thing gone bad.
Yeah.
Rather than why do we keep creating this thing?
Yeah. And they kept bringing up those questions though. They kept bringing it up, but then it would just kind of disappear into the ether of the story of Mark Driscoll falling on his face and this whole thing imploding.
Yeah, I remember my last experience at Christianity Today. I was a contributing editor at Leadership Journal, and I'd written an article, or wanted to write an article for them, called When the Other Woman is the Body of Christ, and talking about how many men risk their marriage in service to, quote unquote, the church. And they didn't want to run it. And Part of my, and that was fine because I knew it was risky with their audience, but they'd done focused research and they'd figured out that their people who they were reading the magazine were people who only wanted cheerleaders. They didn't want to be challenged. They're so beleaguered, these pastors, so beleaguered by their own demands and their own audience and their own thing back home. What they wanted from a magazine was just people telling them what a great people they are and they're doing good work and keep doing at it. So I wondered, when the whole Mars Hill thing started, would it ever dive deep enough to ask the questions for the people that are listening? Because I think it's easy for them to say, well, I'm glad my church isn't like that.
Yeah.
And they don't see the same underlying system, same underlying hero worship. You may have a better white hat in the pulpit for the time being, but in the same way, the structure is going to fail people over the long haul. Anyway, that gets me to a letter I want to read. But before that, I'll get to my best thing I heard this week. And now, since we haven't done this in a couple of weeks, we're woefully behind. I've got a stack of them. So it's probably not the best thing I heard this week, but the best thing I heard sometime that never got into this segment. This is a G.K. Chesterton quote, and I love it. It says, this is the line I really want to say. It may be that he, God, has the eternal appetite of infancy. We have sinned and grown old, and our Father is younger than we. Ooh. And start out like this. For grown-up people are not strong enough to exult in monotony. But perhaps God is strong enough to exult in monotony. It is possible that God says every morning, do it again to the sun, and every evening, do it again to the moon. It may not be automatic necessity that makes all daisies alike. It may be that God makes every daisy separately, but has never got tired of making them. It may be that he has the eternal appetite of infancy, for we have sinned and grown old, and our Father is younger than we. Oh my gosh. What I love about that quote is it just takes you back to how wonderful God is and how easily bored we get with life and circumstance and situation. Even with things that are sometimes beautiful become monotonous over time. And maybe not. Yeah. Maybe God says to the sun every morning, and I don't know what time zone he's in, so that would be complicated because it'd be like every second. Yeah, rise. But I think his point is well taken, that it may be that we have sinned and grown old, and our Father is younger than we. And I wanted to read this email from Jack. Good friend of mine, been part of a fairly decent congregational deal, you know, one of the better ones, not abusive, not doing all kinds. I've been on the leadership for a long time, most of the time that I've known him. And then a few months ago, he felt like God was really asking him to step out. And it was hard because he has friends there, friends in the leadership, friends in the fellowship, and it's a small community, and now he's not going to be going there and all that. But this is what he wrote me just a couple weeks ago, and I thought, man, this is so good. As much as I have tried to live inside the Christian faith with the rule of Scripture and the abundance of obligation, I have touched upon a most unsettling truth. I wonder if I lost something early on in my childhood and stopped me from seeing the mystery in things. Perhaps it wasn't the growing up that plowed over my sense of mystery. Perhaps it was the becoming a man, that part of being sure of oneself, left no room for wonder. Maybe it has been the rush to be right. I don't know where I lost my sense of wonder, of great mystery, and of in life and all things in particular. But like the dull and faded paint job on an old, old house, there was something once beautiful, and today it has faded. There seems to be a way to control oneself in the course of normal Christian life, and to that end, tame the Lion of Judah. What a statement. I love that, how we tame the Lion of Judah. Maybe it has been covered up in the preaching and teaching of principles and the keys of the Christian life. All those are good, but still left off the mystery. I am realizing that every principle and key seems to swallow, ill-fitting, clumsy, and useless. I wonder if those that have the most to lose in this wonder are those who have paid the most into the formulaic principles of Christianity, those whose needs and egos to control were fashioned in the halls of established religion, mostly and most assuredly the doctrines of being right, establishment, creeds, observation of days and events, doctrines, rituals, sanctimony and sanctuary, and so many more building blocks to dull the heart and blind the soul to wonder found in the mystery of Christ. We can't have mystery in the normal Christian faith. Perhaps they believe in no more mystery and wonder beyond the incarnation. If we never encounter the mystery of the fellowship with Jesus, we will put other things in that space, religious things, principles, obligations, appeasements, and the like, mostly because those who are so-called teachers do not know or have not known the expression of life found in a real living relationship with Jesus, the mystery of falling in love with him. After all the time, I am finding little else but empty cans of beans and burnt marshmallows. Today, I do smell smoke, but from a distant fire, the fire of the Creator of the universe who fashioned us in his life and for the love of it gave us the only remedy for it, Jesus Christ. The wonder and mystery of this for me is the beginning of all things new. My heart's desires to know him in the way and ways he wants to reveal himself to me. No formulas, no keys, no principles, just him. I have the Spirit of Christ in me. Surely this is enough. Finally, I've started to see this, the mystery that the Spirit of Christ is in me. Surely this is enough. Finally, I've started to see this, the mystery that has been kept secret from before the foundation of the world. What a treasure it is. I knew that would get you, adventure boy.
Well, man, what an eloquent, just picture saturated dialogue. Like I'm just listening and I'm like, oh my gosh, like that was so well said, and so many things that my heart instantly connected with, and I'm just like, oh, that's so good.
It is good. Wow. Oh my gosh, that's the way I felt. I sent him back when he sent that to me. I sent him back the quote from G.K. Chesterton that I had heard in a show just a couple days before. That same thing about maybe we lose that sense of infancy and wonder, and we've grown older than our father. And he really resonated with it. But yeah, I think this is the thing. We lure ourselves to sleep. I think a lot of the older, more orthodox forms of Christianity, actually were trying to elicit mystery and wonder in their mm-hmm. in their worship experience. But in the conservative group or places where we've grown up, it seems like all the keys and rules and principles and doctrines and ethics have removed the mystery for many people. Now, I've got my friend Bob Stamps, we've had on the podcast before, who... Man, for him, theology is a persistent mystery and a wonder of Jesus unpacking himself, which I think is the best way to read theology. But man, this really touched my heart. I smell a distant fire. It's not the campfire I've burned my beans and marshmallows on. I love that. There's a distant fire of mystery and wonder that I think never gets to grow old.
Yeah, the taming the Lion of Judah, I just love that imagery. Because I feel like that's almost what has to be done, is we've got to cut out the mystery and we've got to tame him in order to be able to have the rules and to be able to have the structures and the systems. We've got to get rid of the mystery. Because if there is mystery and there, like the ancient Celtic view of the wild goose that's running here nor there, or the wind of the spirit that you don't know where it's going to blow, all of that all speaks to a relationship that is adventurous and is mysterious and moves into the unknown. But you can't control the unknown. You can't put five easy steps around the unknown. You can't control mystery. You can't dominate mystery. You can't use mystery to build a platform.
And you can't really encourage people to follow that mystery when you're trying to lock them into the conformity of an institution.
Yeah.
Because the real problem with helping people do this, be free to follow the Jesus as he reveals himself in your heart, is people are going to do stupid stuff in the name of Christ. And when they do stupid stuff, then you got to clamp down on the rules to make sure it doesn't embarrass us as an institution. So, I mean, I remember all this stuff as a pastor where you really want to set people free to follow Jesus. Then some people would do it who shouldn't be doing it yet because they don't have a clue who Jesus is. And so then in the name of trying to not have that stuff go on, you take the mystery out of every other person's heart. Mm. For me, the last 27 years or so of living alongside hungry people, not complacent people that need to be motivated or need to be pressed, or even deluded people who think they know Jesus, who don't have a clue who he is, but spending time with genuinely hungry people who want to connect with him and want to live in that mystery and let God reveal himself and don't have the arrogance of, I know it all, I figured it all out, I'm just teaching you how to do it. I love those people, and I've enjoyed my time among them and will continue to. I even think for me, I was looking at some of the stuff on the retreat from last week and even some of the stuff preceding it, was the whole, this blob in space and God speaking to them. This is taking me down a road for which I'm not comfortable. I don't know where this ends. Yeah. I don't know where. Ooh. Well, because it's easier to talk about he loves me and do seminars on he loves me. And now we're talking about there's something new God's stirring in the world. And the idea of keeping people from trying to manage it and guarding the gift as it, you know, it goes into that more amorphous, ill-defined, if God doesn't work here, this will not work, which I think is always the best space to be in. But never the most comfortable space to be in, unless you really know he's got this. You really got to know in the uncertainty of all that there's something God is doing here. And yet, from the podcast last week, man, I received numerous emails, phone calls, conversations of people saying, this is in the space that God's been opening up my heart as well, that there is a fresh moving of God's light. And not that God hasn't ever wanted to move this way and has always tried, but the idea of it being so easily co-opted into the very thing Jack was talking about here. Let's put it by a campfire and put some rules around it. Let's camp out here on the little bit that we see and miss the greater mystery still to unfold. And that's what I don't want to miss. And it seems weird coming up on this at this season of my life going, wow, I feel like just everything's new. Everything is possible. And man, it just, and it's uncontrollable. And I think you sense the hesitancy even in my own heart that would go, okay, run from this. This could be bad news. Cause if this isn't Jesus, you're going to look like a fool. And yeah, I've been down that road before. I don't know the mystery of it, the unfolding of it, the email I've gotten from people that resonates with their heart has just been really touching to me. I think there's something down this road of mystery and wonder and seeing how God makes himself known in the world.
But as somebody who's been walking in a unique and fresh relationship with God over the last 27 years, what in this new season, as you're holding that space, that globular, that thing in the ether, as you're holding space and guarding space for that, what characteristic of that creates the most angst for you? Is it the mystery? Is it the unknown? Like you mentioned mystery and unknown as we were just talking, but like what is triggering that angst about, ooh, I don't know if we should walk down this, like if it doesn't come through?
I don't know that if it's angst. I wouldn't say it rises to that level. There's just that little bit of hesitation that goes,
okay,
this could be awesome or this could be nuts. and at this point in my life, okay, I'm willing to be nuts. I really am. I think God's doing something here. I think God's stirring something fresh. I see it resonating. I got a number of people just saying, hey, thank you guys for spending time with the 20s and 30s and don't stop. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. And for you in your 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s, don't worry. We're going to spend time with you too. So no, that it's not that we want to just peel it all back to that, but to really make the space to invite those people and those age groups into the dialogue that we've been having. I've been having on here for 17 years with Brad. Now you, I'm excited that there's enough of them saying, wow, we are interested in these things. And, we do want to touch base with it. So I'm excited about it. At the same time, there's those moments where you go, okay, when I'm believing what Jesus says, I'm all in. And when I start looking at the ocean around me that I'm standing on, going, there's some big waves here, dude. There's some things that can happen here. And so I love being on that edge of your own gut. You know, they say if you don't have that little anticipation in your gut now and then, you've already begun to die. So I like that I don't seem to be dying yet.
Yeah.
But I love that. Now, I don't want to tame the lion of Judah. I want to see him do all that he wants to do in the world and be alongside it.
So one of the things that we talked about at the retreat was that there could possibly be 100 or 1,000 other little pockets of people all over the world that we're not even aware of that are having similar conversations and are feeling and sensing a similar move in the spirit and are observing the physical ramifications of what God's doing in the world and how that's engaging and how that's drawing people to the surface. And I got surprised by it by this weekend. Jess and I were up in Deadwood and I enjoy smoking pipe tobacco with a group of friends every once in a while.
That. I know. Saddest thing I've ever heard from you, Kyle.
Here comes that chest beating man in the woods smoking a cigar. But sometimes I like to go in the woods and smoke a cigar with some guys around a campfire. But one of my favorite tobacco companies happens to be in Deadwood. And I just went in and I got into a conversation. I went in looking for a cigar and got into a conversation with the owner. And his heart was just hungry. Is he a traditional person that you would think of as far as somebody who you would see in a quote unquote institutional church? Absolutely not. He's got trauma background. He's former military. He's got tattoos everywhere. He drives a Harley. He owns a tobacco shop. And yet his heart was for the vagabonds, was for the blue sheep, was for the people on the fringes, and just a longing for them to know life and for them to step into something deeper and richer than just the surface stuff. And even the fact that here's this crowd of guys that you would think of, oh, it's super rough and there's no way. And yet we got into a conversation about marriage and the average length of relationship in his team of people was 23 years of marriage. Mm. It's like, whoa, that is non-traditional in today's world to have the bulk of your staff have been in a marriage for over 23 plus years. And just it caught me off guard again. It's like, here is somebody who's having a very similar conversation as I was having last weekend with people from all over the United States. Oh. And it's happening in the basement of a former 1800s brothel. And we're talking about how do we create space for people to grow in their conversational intimacy with Christ. It was wild. It was so good.
That's awesome. Forward to that. When I come back from this retreat, we first started playing this thing, Kyle. We kind of talked about whether a space for 24, 25 people would be enough because that's all we had there.
Yeah.
When you told me, because I tried to get numbers from you. How are we doing? Signups, whatever. Do we need to hit it more or whatever? And I never got numbers from you till very last. I got about 10, 12 of us. And I went, what? I probably would have canceled this thing. I would go, you know, we just didn't hit the right date, didn't hit the right weekend. And I know coming away from the retreat and what happened, and it really needed to be that size and all of that, that we really, even my own priorities, really skewed from what it is that God values, you know, versus what we value. We value what's big and visible and, you know, ride this bandwagon, 20s and 30s, and you and I doing more retreats, writing books, you know, trying to do what we said, what God felt God said, guard the space by not doing any of those things. But almost despise the days of small beginnings. Our whole priority structure as a thing is it'll be significant when it's visible. And I think that's really backwards. I think it's significant in its invisibility. I think these pools of water kind of popping up to the surface all over the world and it not being in the control of someone, not being part of a quote-unquote movement, is a God-gifted thing. The scripture is on my heart after we talked last week, after I came back from the retreat, was from Luke 16, where it says, you are the ones who justifies yourselves in the eyes of others. He's talking to the Pharisees about their lust for money and power. And he says, you are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of others, but God knows your hearts. What people value highly is detestable in God's sight. Now, that's a real poke in the chest kind of language. What people value, money, size, scale, success, you go down whatever road you want to go down. This is in the context of you can't serve God and mammon. That's in the context of what he's talking about with the Pharisees. Yeah. And he says what man values or what people value, and not just, and people highly value, is detestable. That's a pretty strong word coming from his father, right? It's not just like, hey, that's not really the best thing. Find something better. He's saying that whole space is detestable to God. As we're talking today and putting that alongside Jack's letter and this thing for mystery and wonder, thinking what God values is so completely different from what we value. Security, safety. And when we kind of gravitate toward that space, as Jack has lived in it for almost all of his life, and now he's coming to the season of going, I lost my wonder back there as a child. I lost it, and I don't want to lose it. And what I want to say to 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s, find your way back to wonder. Find your way back to mystery. Find your way back to a God who's more real than all the principles and doctrines and programs you can lay out. And help encourage that in other people as you discover it for yourself and learn to live in that. I mean, I love this because it brings me back to things that I value sometimes just by being a human being in the 21st century and security and whatever and needing to be responsible and financial and all that kind of stuff and say, gosh, things that I value are detestable to God. I want to learn what is so valuable to God that it makes those other things look as detestable as they are.
Well, and it brings us back to the parable of the soil too, right? As I hear you talking about that and processing that, I think of the soil that encounters the wonder of God, right? Where it springs up fast and it's encountered this wonder and it's encountered this beautiful connection with a loving father. But then the cares and the concerns of the world choke it out. Yep. That all of a sudden these things that are less valuable or detestable that have blaring neon signs of look at me, look at me, look at me, value me, value me, value me, it can so easily snatch that wonder. And even the conversation that we've been talking about rest, love, and play, that describes a child. Like watching my 2-year-old daughter run around, there's no stress or anxiety in her life. She's resting. She's playing, and she's playing in an experience of love. And there's all kinds of wonder. I mean, even she found a wooden yo-yo for the first time the other day. And it was just like mind blown at this wooden yo-yo and what it can do. And that it was that freshness of wonder and discovery that's cultivated in that childlike heart.
And that's where we learn the best. That's what when people talk about playing with God, people go, yeah, but God's serious, man. God's got stuff going on. Yeah, but he knows we learn best at play with him. Yes. In the white-knuckled, intense, going to be a zealous believer. None of that has ended well. People that are going to white-knuckle their way into God and be the serious, radical believers, the ones I see living free and full and growing are people who are at secure in God's love, at rest in his work, not theirs. That's that little hesitation you're hearing. Is he really do his work if we don't do it? Yeah, at rest in his work and then at play with him. And that's not a way to be a more immature believer. That's actually the best way to learn. My generation was big on put them in a classroom, make them sit down and be quiet and shut up. And here's the math facts. And they really still resist any other alternative teaching modes because that's the way we learned it. And man, you got to learn it that way. And I think we've done that to God too.
And that comes back to that childlike heart, right? And us losing the mystery and valuing things that God doesn't value because God's like, hold on, when did I tell you to be serious? When did I tell you that you had to white knuckle this thing in our relationship together? Yeah. And that's, I mean, you look at even as the disciples are growing and as they're walking through this thing and you see even like Peter's tension of the white knuckling it principles and then the child like, yeah, I'm going to jump out of the boat and I'm going to walk in the water. Because that's what my daddy invited me to do. But then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, no, my scientific mind's coming in. The things like, wait a minute, I'm standing over the abyss and I don't even know, what's happening, what's going to happen.
Or just got to be responsible and walking out here on the waves is not responsible. Get your tail back in that boat that was going to be submerged anyway. Hey, since this is our prior last podcast of the year, I think we're going to go on hiatus here for the holidays. But I thought a couple letters I'd like to get to that kind of still fit into this space and kind of come from the retreat, actually. This one from Laura. The discussions you and Kyle have been having lately have been piercing my heart in a good way. They've caused me to go to God with new questions as I venture more deeply into this life of learning how to live loved and loving others from this fulfilling place of wonderment. Isn't that interesting? I'm sitting here with tears running down my face, listening to you and Kyle talk about the simplicity of prayer. It feels like what I heard this morning put in the final nail in the coffin of guilt for not seeing prayer as something to do a certain way at a certain time, but simply as part of my relationship with the Trinity. I've wanted to believe that for many years, but because of my upbringing as a pastor's kid and many years in the institution called church, I can still struggle with what good Christians do and don't do. Living from a place of being loved by my Father has been a journey of freedom, while at the same time a bit terrifying because of the guilt that has been ingrained in me of what a Christian should look and act like. I was one of those who would profoundly say, I don't have a religion, I have a relationship, while being completely blind to the fact that my relationship was based on fitting into the mold of an institutional church.
Oof.
Yeah, it's one thing to get, as they say, one thing to get you out of the system and another thing to get it out of you. Jack and Laura's letters both are kind of pointed that same wonderment and back to what God can do in us that's much more astounding than the best thing we can do for God.
Yeah.
That's where the contrast has to be, I think. And I got this one. I just listened to your most recent podcast and I so badly wish I had made it to the retreat. I actually was planning to come, but I allowed my fears to overcome me, and I was afraid that my trauma would be too much for the group. Having been at the group, I know that's not funny. This person had, I've withheld her name. Whatever trauma she has been through, I'm telling you what, if you had been there, you would have known. Your trauma would have been most welcome. We were able to process trauma with people. She said, in addition to childhood trauma, I've experienced two sudden losses in the past 2 years. I resonated very deeply with some of the things that you and Kyle were discussing. I struggle to trust anyone or anything with the label Christian, especially leaders. I also love the term holding space and use it quite a bit in my profession. I'm so glad to hear you all using it. I also resonate very deeply with the feeling of being in the desert. I have felt this way since at least 2013, alone. desiring authentic community in my faith and being hopeful that something or someone would come along. The only thing that has sustained me through this time has been your podcast. The addition of Kyle has been wonderful. His mental health perspective is very helpful and familiar to me and my generation, and I hope you all will continue to talk for many podcasts to come. As you were talking about those in our generation who desire to mentor someone younger than myself, I have mixed feelings. I have had many mentors in my life, from coaches to teachers, but never someone to walk alongside me in faith. I wonder what a healthy relationship like that would even look like without a religious performance undertone to it.
Ooh. And that's how we kind of finished the retreat, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Is how do we even recognize, how do you begin to even discern or understand or recognize the characteristics of somebody who will steward that well, who will walk with you without having to force it into a box or create some principles or make a thing out of it? What does that even look like? What are those characteristics or those trends or those hints that this person might be safe?
Well, some of the ones, I mean, my good friend Dave Coleman passed away last week, co-author of the book, and we knew it was kind of coming. And they've asked me to do the service for my good friend. So it's going to be tough to do. I love Dave. Dave's been one of those guys for me. It's been that way for 30 plus years. Met him when I was pastoring. And I think that's the kind of person I want people to find. And they say, well, what's he like? How do you know he's like? And I'd just say a couple things about him. A gentleman, not looking for position, not looking to build anything. Even when he came to my fellowship, I invited him at one point to maybe be an elder, be on staff. He goes, I'm really not interested in any of that stuff. And I was like, what? And he said, I can't explain to you. You'll know someday. And I did know someday. I didn't understand then. But he's a man who just simply with conversation, with word, and with friendship, and mostly a cheerleader for my journey, not at all the fixer in my life, just a cheerleader, but at times willing to ask the difficult question, to open a door into another room I wasn't seeing. And I think that's the thing. She uses the term mentor, and it's always a word I quiver at, because anybody that wants to mentor you or be your spiritual father or mother, that's just weird talk. So run from that. It really is just an older brother or sister, not necessarily by age, just down the road a bit. And you find when you're with them that your heart's encouraged about the things God's doing in you. It's not, I need to be like them and I need to get more information. I think the value of Dave in my life, or Kevin Smith, or others that God has brought to my journey in various times, have been when I'm with them, my own excitement about the wonder of Jesus being unpacked in me is exploded.
Yeah.
Instead of the yuck meter, I guess the wonder meter, they peg my trust meter. They peg that part of me that goes, I want to live in that space with him. I want to learn to live like that with Jesus. And so I say, you know, people are looking to gather, build a house church or a new kind of community, build a movement. Man, run from that stuff. That's the stuff that man values that's highly detestable in the sight of God. Find someone that just wants to be your friend and just be in your life and encourage you. And when I heard her talking about this, since 2013, I've been alone in a desert. I want to encourage people who feel that way. You don't think your answer is, I got to find somebody to be in my life like that, because that'll take care of that. No, being in the desert with God is where this water is bubbling up. And the 2 weeks we're going to take a hiatus here off the podcast, don't say, oh, Kylan, wait, I don't know what to do. And I know most of you don't feel like that. But this is a good time to, I think the theme of this podcast, ending the year, is awesome. Just that we would get back to wonder and mystery, and what is Jesus revealing in me? And wherever I'm taming the Lion of Judah, I'm going to let him free. I'm just not going to try to put that lion in a box, not going to try to put the bride in a box. I really want to live in the wonder and mystery of Christ in us, the hope of glory as he unfolds in people's lives.
As you're talking about the desert, the passage that came to mind was my favorite passage in Scripture that God continually brings me back to, and that's Hosea 2. In that passage, Father speaks out to his bride, to his beloved, and says, I will therefore allure you to the desert. I will speak tenderly to you there, and I will make the valley of trouble a doorway of hope.
Wow.
And that, for me, that I went through a long, dark season where it was it felt very much more like a desert or a valley of trouble than a doorway of hope. But then the writer goes on to say that in those days, I will no longer call him master, but I will call him either friend or beloved, depending on what translation you use. And I resonate so deeply with that sense of being in a desert. And yet often what happens when we're in that desert is the less wild lovers or the imposters that we sought life from for so long, all of a sudden they're drying up. And God's saying, come back to your first love. Come back to your beloved. I was the one who gave you those fresh fruits. I was the one that gave you life. Even though there might have been a different perspective on them or somebody else's face might have been there, I was the one behind that that was offering you life. And man, I just resonate so deeply like with desert like that. Oh, that'll get me fired up again. But I love that. I love that language of, I will allure you to the desert and I will speak tenderly to you in the desert and I will make the valley of trouble a doorway of hope.
That's great stuff. That may be the best thing I've heard all week. And I hope people who are listening to this, who feel alone, who feel like I need to get someone in my life, you know what? You don't. You just need to fall back into the mystery of Christ in you. Fall back there. If there's somebody God wants an older person, there's two ways I approach this. One, if you're hungry for someone, I've always had those in my life, but I never sought them. God brought them to me. So look around, just ask God.
Yeah.
But I also want to talk to those in my generation that say, you would love to do that. Make sure it's not about you. Make sure you don't love to do that because it serves something in you, because that's the one thing that it can't do. If it serves something in you, it's going to make other people run. And you'll not be a helpful influence for them. So be at peace and don't go looking for people. Let God bring them to you too. But I love that we would focus on this at the end of the year of leaning into more mystery and wonder. I want to contemplate ways in which I'm taming the Lion of Judah and don't even know that I am. I want to contemplate what it is to hold space in the desert and let God allure me there, which is not drive you into the desert, which is how we often talk about it. It's my love's going to call you to a place that you wouldn't go without that love being there. And yeah, it's going to be risky. And yes, it's not going to be something you can totally define and nail down and got all the walls around it. Forget that. Just know that he's big enough to take you and smell that distant fire that Jack was talking about. Yeah. Oh, because I think that's that thing, that amorphous globular thing growing in the world and pulsating with the life of the Father. And man, maybe in 2022, we'll know more what that's like. Who knows? So Merry Christmas, Kyle. Happy New Year to you guys. Look forward to talking to you when the new year rolls around.
I can't wait to see. And even what new mysteries are going to arise in the 2 weeks as we move into the new year and holidays. It's going to be exciting.
Yeah, and then we'll have like 55 pages of notes to work with.
Exactly.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.